This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Friday to you. So Dr. Ben Schmidt has been on the show before, friend of the show. He's going to be on consistently so long as he has the time to do it. We go way back to when, guys, were you a teenager?
Yeah.
Like the first time I met you guys?
In high school, college.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And one of Ben's brothers is really good friends with my son, Nick. They went through school together. Anyway, so Dr. Ben is a GI doctor, and I wanted to have him on just to kind of talk about it in general. We'll get into that in a second here. You can follow him at docschmidt.org, and he does a ton of social media. You've probably seen him on your TikTok or Reels, and you just didn't know who that was or that he was a friend of the show, but he is here now. Good to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I just told the doc, and you guys can hold me to it, that I'm going to go in and get a colonoscopy.
Absolutely.
So hopefully, no promises, he'll be the next man to see my bare bottom.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Looking forward to it.
No promises.
Privilege.
You get the privilege. I'm just
Absolutely.
Saying, yeah.
You should charge for that.
What do you mean, should?
We've got an agreement already worked out. Don't worry.
Yeah, he's charging you. That's what that is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the first time I did it, I was really scared, like most people are. Mm-hmm. But I was worried because I have a celebrity butthole, and I was afraid it looked like Spiro Agnew or something. Like you don't know.
Right.
I was afraid, like I'd get in there to be like, get my sketch pad. Like you have to see this thing, right?
Exactly. Happens all the time.
How often do you do colonoscopies?
Almost every day. I did 12 today before coming here.
12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We do between 10 and 15 in a day, depending on.
Wow.
The
So we'll get back to that. Gut health.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it. I have the basics of what an antibiotic is. For the life of me, I couldn't talk intelligently for 30 seconds about a probiotic, but you see them advertised everywhere and, you know, over the counter, like a line, or go to a doctor, get a prescription, and having the marker for Alzheimer's. I'm very interested in the connection between dementia and gut health, but I'm just lost.
Sure.
So can you give us sort of a 101 primer?
Yeah, I mean, the big takeaway is there's this thing called the microbiome, and that's what really we're talking about when we're talking about gut health. And the microbiome is essentially literally trillions of bacteria that live in your gut. That's the good bacteria that live in kind of harmony and do a ton of different things for your body. They help make vitamins, they help you digest foods, they help make hormones, and a lot of different factors that they help produce. And what we're learning more and more every year is that they don't just help with your literal digestion. They impact your health throughout your body. And we're learning that they might impact schizophrenia. They might impact your weight. They might impact your risk of getting other diseases or having other diseases, even completely outside the GI tract. And the whole gut health movement, the idea is trying to improve the health of this microbiome. The thought is that we're having all these low-fiber foods, low-fiber diets, because we're all eating hyper-processed fast food, and that's not good for the microbiome. We need to eat high-fiber, healthy foods to keep our microbiome bacteria healthy.
Yeah.
And keep us healthy overall. And that's where probiotics come into play.
Do normal people, non-doctors, typically, I mean, how can they assess their gut health? Is it just through other presentations? I say presentation because I'm a third year resident. How do you know that you have good or bad gut health?
Right now, there's not a single or a simple test. I mean, there's places not in the medical community, more in the kind of the naturopath chiropractor areas that are offering tests to give you a literal printout of the percentage of different types of bacteria that you have in your gut. And, you know, they say you have 10% of this type, 20% of this type. But the problem is we don't really have a normal. It's not a matter of you need to have exactly 20% of this or you're going to be sick. Everybody's a little bit different. There's so much variability from one person to one person. And that doesn't necessarily mean that person who has 20% is sick. That person who has 10% is well. So that's why I don't even offer those tests where I could technically give you that balance, that percentage, because I don't even know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So what we have to, we kind of have to work backwards. And in people who are having GI issues, we try to improve their gut health by doing things like encouraging them to eat, you know, fiber foods, to find trigger foods for them. You know, some people, fiber foods are a trigger. Some people, gluten is a trigger, for example. And sometimes it's trial and error, cutting out gluten, eating gluten, cutting out dairy, trying onions, Brussels sprouts. These are triggers often that mess with people's guts.
And you made such a good point on the break when we were talking that there are only a handful of symptoms you have with your GI.
Mm-hmm.
This hurts, that hurts, I'm a little queasy, I've been throwing up, it's going out the back end. But there are hundreds of things it could be.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's what's so tricky about being a GI doctor and working with patients is it's not something that we can always solve in the first visit. And I explain it's like that's why WebMD is so scary, because it's true. Technically, your symptoms could be colon cancer. It could be IBS. It could be you ate some bad chicken last night. You know, it's sometimes we have to give it time, do these tests to tease it out and figure out what's going on.
By the way, sidebar, since you mentioned that, we have all gone through this. Oh, man, it's coming out of both ends. It's either food poisoning or the norovirus. Mm-hmm. How do you tell?
Technically, there is a test where you do a stool test, essentially, and we can find, you know, the norovirus in your stool. But often it's not necessary to check, because really the treatment for either one of those things is going to be the same. It's going to be fluids. It's going to be rest. You know, stay hydrated as much as you can and give it time to pass, because both of those will do that.
And is it just as simple when we throw up or when we have diarrhea that your body, there's something in there that's foreign and combatant, and it's just trying to get rid of it? Is that why we suffer when we do?
In the case of infections, a lot of the time, yeah, that's exactly it. The bacteria might be releasing a toxin that you've got. The virus is triggering some sort of response to the body and it is trying to expel it. There's other conditions, you know, like Crohn's disease or something like that might cause diarrhea for other reasons, though.
Talking to our friend Dr. Ben Schmidt here. You can find him at docschmidt.org. I'm so fascinated, and I kid around about being a third-year resident because my TikTok is now just populated by all that stuff because I'm fascinated by it. And I love, you know, I've been watching The Pitt, and I started watching Chicago Med, and I don't think I could have ever been a doc. I might have been able to do the schoolwork. I don't think I have that tough gear. Like you and Hagen and all the docs who I know, you're mutants. You have a gear that normal people don't have. To what extent were you born with that, and your colleagues, and what extent did they train it into you?
I think training is a big part of it. I mean, you have to have a good work ethic, like you kind of alluded to with the classwork, to be able to get into medical school and get through those first 2 years that are really just lectures and kind of books and all that kind of thing. But to get through the second 2 years of medical school and then the residency, which is when you're working the long hours, seeing all these patients, I think that work ethic comes into play. But you just see the people above you doing it, your senior residents, your attendings, and that's where you kind of learn how to do it, how to stick through it, and what you need to do, how you need to prepare to be able to, you know, perform at that level.
So one of the games they play in law school, which thank God I figured out pretty early, is they just give you twice as much work as you can get done. Mm-hmm. And they want to see that you're smart enough to figure out what's important and what's less important. Was it similar in med school? And were there any points where you and your friends were like, dude, I don't know if I can do this?
I think there's, I don't know if to that extent, just because when you're taking care of patients, obviously it's not like they can give you two patients and let one of them die and survive, you know, keep working on the other one. But I guess
good point.
In the sense of like wanting to just see what you're capable of. I mean, it's something where that's constantly being discussed with the work hour regulations of residency and making sure that we're, you know, being safe. Because that's how the story goes, is the people who started residency programs were just on cocaine all the time. And that's why they were always able to be going 100% of the time, 24/7. So it's always about trying to be within your limits, I guess, to keep people safe. So what we learn is just how to prioritize things and how to triage, say, this needs to be done now, this needs to be done later, this can be done after I take a second to take a breath after this last patient almost died.
And anyone who's ever watched a show or a movie, they know the bedside manner and, oh, this guy's so good at the bedside, or this guy's really not so good at the bedside. Brilliant doctor, but can't talk to patients. And you talked about how there are specific trainings now for things, for example, delivering bad news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, what are the overall overarching messages they give to you guys about delivering bad news.
Yeah, I mean, there's literal classes that we have where we kind of go through that, actually like role play breaking bad news, telling someone that they have cancer, telling someone a loved one died or something like that. And they break it down fairly, maybe scientifically isn't the right word, but algorithmically at least. There's acronyms we learn. I don't know if I'm going to be able to remember this on the spot, but like spikes, I remember, is one acronym that we learn, where like the S stands for setting the scene. For example, you don't tell someone in a loud hallway that they have cancer. You bring them to a quiet room. You kind of sit them down. You give them a warning shot, meaning you actually tell them, hey, I've got some bad news. So you don't just say, you have cancer. You tell them it's going to be bad so that they're a little bit primed for that. They're expecting it now. And then you can kind of go into that. And then not being ambiguous with your terms, you know, in the sense of don't say you have a malignancy or you have a metastasis. Use terms that people know. You tell them you have cancer. You can get into the details later, but yeah, you need to give them the answer right away. So these have been kind of tested as ways that are going to make people a little bit more receptive and at least better able to handle this information.
How often do you have to do that?
It's unfortunately more frequent than you would think. I mean, me personally, I would say that the types of cancer that I diagnose people with are colon cancer, stomach cancer, and esophagus cancer. I would say on average about twice a month, I'm probably diagnosing someone with a cancer where I'm telling them.
And what are the overall big kind of things that people want to look out for, whether it's stomach or another GI form of cancer?
Yeah. I mean, it's always hard to give specific symptoms to worry about, kind of like I was alluding to with there being so much crossover. Yeah. But I always tell patients what I look for is what's called alarm symptoms. So these are symptoms that make me worried. We need to look a little bit further. Blood in the stool, pain, or really any symptom that wakes you up from sleep in the middle of the night, like you are completely asleep and now pain is waking you up. Completely new symptoms that are impacting your daily life that onset later in life, like after the age of 50, for example. Mm-hmm. And then another big one is weight loss that you're not trying to do. Like you're eating the same, you're not exercising anymore, but you've lost 20 pounds in the last month.
Yeah.
That's something that worries me. Talking to a doctor would be a good next step.
And we were talking about that you're in a discipline that it's very general. I'm sick, I'm hurting, I'm this, I'm that. And so many things present that's probably not your expertise.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it is, I remember one time I thought I had testicular cancer because I was having terrible pain down there.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being a prostate infection.
Sure.
And when I went into the urologist, he said, actually, testicular cancer doesn't really present mm-hmm. like being sore down there. And I thought that was fascinating. Like,
oh, yeah.
I shouldn't have known that. I'm not a doctor, but that's what you would think. It just makes sense.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, one similar example, I have patients a lot of times that come in with belly pain on their right side. They might have looked up that their liver's over there and they're worried that they have something wrong with their liver. Maybe they drink more than they know they should. But I tell people all the time, liver problems usually actually don't cause pain. So that's a similar example where there's often patient comes in worried about one thing and we end up a different direction.
Guys, questions for Bent?
I do have a question. I just wanted to ask you, Dr. Schmidt, because you come from kind of a unique perspective, being a doctor and being so active on social media. I know there are, like, especially with something like gut health, it's kind of a trendy topic at this point. There's a lot of bad information out there.
Mm.
Talk about how important it is to seek actual guidance from a doctor mm-hmm. rather than just someone who's not been vetted, who's online.
Yeah, that's absolutely crucial, because that's a big part of what I devote my content to on social media, is fighting this misinformation. There's so many people out there trying to sell you these gut health supplements just because they want you to think you need what they happen to be selling. So if you're having symptoms that are worrying you, I talk with patients all the time. I'm okay with you having supplements and taking supplements if they make you feel better. But if you have these concerning symptoms, at least talking to a doctor just to see if there's any of those alarm signs or red flags that make the doctor want to do something more, do a colonoscopy, do some blood work. I think you can have both, but you don't want to just kind of box yourself into TikTok supplements as your only option for helping you.
I was going to say, isn't it a good idea to be careful just to buy something when that person may just be selling you something?
Exactly. That's the conflict of interest. I mean, ironically, doctors get called out for this by, you know, kind of conspiracy theorists or just doubtful people on social media a lot that we're just pushing drugs for big pharma. But doctors don't make money. Like if I prescribe you a medicine, I'm not getting a kickback from that. It's illegal for me to get any money from that. Whereas then people turn to social media and they're buying this fancy gut health digestive enzyme pill that literally at the bottom of TikTok, it even says this person's getting 10% of whatever sale you give them. So
what about that? Since you brought up the conspiracy theories, the big one, and I even said the other day, and here's one I kind of buy, the whole it makes more money to treat than it does to cure. As doctors, you just roll your eyes at that?
You mean in the sense of like people think we're keeping them sick? So
not even so much doctors, but more the big pharma.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the problem is Big Pharma is going to dedicate their research into very specific areas, but they're putting money towards chemotherapy for cancer, for drugs to cure or stop at least autoimmune conditions. It's impossible to know for sure. I mean, I'm not in these boardrooms, but I don't think Big Pharma is as sinister as people think. I think that, of course, it is true that they have a bottom line that they're trying to upkeep. So they need to treat or find treatments for diseases that are common or are going to be around. But,
I don't last think question. We're over time, but it's always so good with you. How do you feel about the wonder drugs, the Ozempics, the Zepbounds? Are you a fan?
I'm a fan, but I think that they're always going to be used in moderation because they cause more side effects than people realize. So it's always talking to your doctor about
dangerous, damaging, or just more inconvenient and annoying.
I mean, they can be damaging. Severe nausea, the effects can last even beyond being on the drug because it's a hormone modulator. So, I mean, you can have really severe side effects, really severe constipation. So, I mean, it's nothing to be taken lightly, but they're great drugs if used appropriately and monitored appropriately.
Yeah. That is Dr. Ben Schmidt. You can follow him on social media or you can go to docschmidt.org. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it.
Absolutely great to be here. Thank you.
326 DGS on KMOX. Brian says, if your PSA is at a good level, is it necessary for a colonoscopy? That's a question for Ben, but I'll handle that one. I still think that because I know these things because my mom had colon cancer, so I'm in a special group. And it's been 14 years since I've had my last colonoscopy, my one and only. So I was just talking to Ben about making an appointment and going in. It's great now that you can get so much information from your blood tests, your PSAs. But I believe that I think they've lowered it from 50 to 45, maybe even 40.
Yeah.
Really?
You should start getting your getting colonoscopies every 5 years, 10 years, something like that. So,
yeah, I mean, I know it's crazy. And, it's funny. I was surprised about this. I didn't realize how many people don't really have a primary care doctor. I thought everybody did. Because I've had people ask me, not ask me for advice, but they're talking about those things. I'm like, well, just ask your doctor. Just send him an email or text him or something. And they're like, I don't have a doctor.
So have you had any yet?
What?
Colonoscopies.
Yeah. Yeah. At least one.
You don't have to get defensive.
If I had two, maybe I don't remember one.
Yeah, what if they doubled up on you? This guy's so tremendous, let's just do it again.
Yeah.
I want a second opinion on my opinion. Yeah, I famously loved the prep. I'm the only guy in the world who likes the prep.
Look, it's bad, but it's worth it.
I didn't mind it at all. I didn't like going under. I didn't like the IV.
Oh.
I liked the breakfast afterwards.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to plan to eat afterwards because that arguably is the worst part, is not eating.
Yeah.
That's hard.
I liked losing 5 pounds.
You lost 5 pounds?
Oh, yeah.
From the prep?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I didn't.
And
really,
the not eating?
I didn't really check, so.
Right. Yeah, I weighed during this segment. Welcome back, guys. 336 Dave Glover Show, 104.1 FM KMOX. Dave Murray joins us. Hello, Dave.
Hello there. Talking about the old PSA numbers, huh? The colonoscopies.
Yeah, I got a little experience with that.
Yeah, I've got, I've got my fifth one, I think it is, coming up in 2006.
Good for you.
I put it on the calendar to look forward to it. It's the best sleep you'll ever have.
Yeah.
Yeah, see,
it's a good nap.
I am the only person that didn't. I hated it. Yeah. I did not like it. No. I liked the pooping. I just didn't like the going to sleep.
Also, we need to record you in the recovery room when you're coming out of the anesthesia.
That's the last thing you need to do.
I want to hear what Dave says.
That is the very last thing you need to do.
You can pretty much guess what I'm like when I'm like that. Just dumber.
Last time I went around the room asking if that was the best sphincter they'd seen all week.
That smile.
Yeah. Nick said you asked every single nurse in there.
That's the best.
Yeah. They'd be like, yeah, you got the best one. I'd be like, how about you?
What do you think?
What do you think?
Am I pretty?
I can't speak for women, but
I
think there's a lot of men that are afraid to get it. They're just afraid to get it.
Oh, of course.
Do it. Just do it.
Well,
it's
embarrassing.
Deal.
It's uncomfortable. But guess what? It's less embarrassing and uncomfortable than dying. So
that's a pretty good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You do it. As you get up to our age, you get about every 5 years if you're in good shape.
Yeah, I'm gonna have Ben do mine. So, Dave, we have some interesting weather moving in this weekend, right?
Yes. You know, the bouncing continues last weekend of March. You know, it's a bit of an unsettled pattern today, all about summertime. We have a very strong cold front coming in Sunday, probably Sunday mid-afternoon, maybe late afternoon. We're ahead of that front all day tomorrow. It'll be about 75. It will be windy. Kind of a changeable sky, mix of clouds and sunshine. There will be some showers around, mainly rain showers on Saturday, and again about 75, not too bad. We'll add a couple of thunderstorms Saturday night, nothing severe. It's mainly just a scattered rain pattern. Sunday is the day, periods of rain and some thunderstorms. Best shot of some strong, possibly severe thunderstorms will be Sunday afternoon into Sunday evening, prime time, 2 p.m. to about 7 p.m., where the severe weather hits, and it's not for everybody, it's not a repeat of a couple of Fridays ago, it's not the same setup, but heavy rain, lightning, moderate to large hail in isolated areas, winds of 60 miles per hour, possible tornadoes. So we keep an eye on the sky going through Sunday afternoon, but it's not as big an outbreak as it was a couple of weeks ago, and the primary focus is going to be St. Louis to the south and to the east going through Sunday afternoon. Cold front comes through Sunday night. Everything fades away. Monday is partly sunny and chilly. Now, we were low 80s today, 52 for the high on Monday. Mm. That's noticeable. Monday night into Tuesday morning down to 35 degrees. It's just about a 24-hour cold snap, though.
Okay.
That's about it.
Very good. Headlines, Rach?
Yeah, Headlines is brought to you by Schnucks. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app. There have been 42 untranslatable words added to the Oxford English Dictionary. So in a post on its website, the dictionary explains that lexicalized words found in certain languages, like those from South Africa, Ireland, and Southeast Asia, often don't have English counterparts. So over time, those words and terms often simply become absorbed into the English vernacular and eventually added to the dictionary. So they're adding 42 of them right now.
I couldn't repeat what you just said.
So these are words that don't have an English translation.
Okay.
That we are just going to accept as, okay, there is no English translation. Okay. It's just going to become a part of the English
language.
Can we make it? Can we make English translate? Can we just
We can do anything we want.
Yeah, let's make it up.
A new study is warning about the dust on Mars, saying it could complicate any visits to Mars. It would get all over the place. I mean, this feels like a big duh, but there's been a study done showing like, hey, this would actually be
a
huge deal. Studies at the time of the lunar landings also showed that prolonged exposures to the moon's dust could cause chronic health effects. They're thinking the same thing for Mars as
well. Look what happened on The Martian.
Yeah.
You like that movie?
He grew potatoes out of
it. I
like
that movie.
It was a great movie. It was super fun.
I think it's a documentary.
I think so, too. I think it was real.
The University of Maryland has picked their commencement speaker, and it is Kermit the Frog. He's going to deliver the May 21st address to the graduates, a choice that it says honors the long history between the university and creator of the Muppets, Jim Henson. He's an alumni of the University of Maryland.
It's either going to kill or it's going to die.
Right.
I think it's going to kill. I love Kermit the Frog. I'm such a dork.
Yeah, but you're not 18.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about the fact that they were children graduating. Mm-hmm.
That is
a very young adults.
Hey,
could you croak from it?
You guys are you guys are going into the adult world. You just finished. You graduated. Congratulations. Here's a puppet from when you were
from the 70s.
A
kid.
this coming from the guy who tried to get Gilligan to speak at his commencement.
Not tried. Did. That was the problem. Son of a bitch wanted his money.
He's real.
You know that one, Dave? I almost didn't get my diploma in law school.
I have not heard that.
Yeah,
story.
Me and one of my jackass friends booked Bob Denver Gilligan to be the commencement speaker, and we thought it was just a big, you know, funny joke, and they took it seriously, and they called the dean. And so when I walked across and I got my diploma, I looked and it was empty, and it just had a note saying "See me" from the dean. That happened. That happened in life.
I
go in there and I've. Like, they could have held my diploma, but I've been there 3 years, paid them a bunch of money, I've graduated. But I walk in, he sits down, he just goes, "Gilligan? Seriously, Gilligan?" I'm like, fan of the show. What are you going to do?
Have you guys heard that Bill Maher has an upcoming dinner at the White House with Donald Trump. Have you heard about this?
I have. He's really taking a lot of crap for it
he
from
is,
his people.
But he says he sees the dinner as a potential opportunity for reconciliation and dialogue and compared it to Nixon going to China saying, quote, you gotta try, man. I appreciate that sentiment. I mean, it's like, could you just complain forever and have everyone on your side stay happy with you? Yes. But I feel like Bill Maher maybe is actually seeking some kind of compromise. Is he going to get it? Who knows? But he's going to try. He's going to put out the effort and try.
It's going,
and that's something I can appreciate.
I think it will effectively end his career.
You think
I'm
so?
I'm not saying it should. I'm a big Bill Maher fan. And the reason I'm a big Bill Maher fan is I think he has come so much to the center. He would say that he's never moved. Everyone says that. Everyone's wrong. We all move. But I think it's really going to piss off his people.
What does he think he accomplishes, number one? But also, I don't have a problem with that unless you're going to go there and bend the knee. If you've been critical of the guy and you've been hammering this guy for his behavior for all this time, you can't just go there and be his buddy. Don't you have to be the same as you always have been?
I think you do. I think you do.
And that would be a respectable thing. I think if you're going to go, if you go to the White House and you're still going to tell him what he's full of, good for you.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not going to look good if you just go there and smile and pose for photo ops and bend the knee.
Tara is asking how you spell Dr. Schmidt. And, Tara, you nailed it. It's S-C-H-M-I-D-T, docschmidt.org. Going back to our gastroenterologist.
Thought this was kind of cool. Disney World is offering 50% off summer ticket discounts for kids this summer.
Who is Rich?
Disney World.
Okay.
And I just know it's extremely expensive. So if you have kids between the ages of 3 to 9 this summer, the 50% discount is valid on 3-day tickets or longer from visits from May 27th through September 20th. So
what do you figure? You take your family of four for a week. $5,000?
I think 10
grand?
Probably 8
for a
to
week?
10.
Well, you got to include hotel.
Yeah, hotel.
I mean, that's
going to
be...
You stay at the properties.
Yeah, if you stay off-site, you can definitely do it a lot cheaper than that. Like, you can stay off-site and you can get, you know, $200 a night hotel and you can do all that for a lot less. On-site, forget it.
$10,000 on-site.
Yeah, on-site, forget it.
Yeah.
With food and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, quick break, right back. DGS. DGS on KMOX. I got a running nose. Like, not sick. I don't know. Why the hell would I say that? Like, I have a symptom of sickness, but I'm not sick. just like the right side just keeps on going.
Do you think it could be allergies?
It could be. Yeah, it could be.
Maybe it's because you're so hungover today.
That could be.
Yeah,
that
you're
could
wearing
be.
It.
Two
you're
drinks.
It. Two drinks.
Two drinks will do it.
In like 12 hours.
Got him flat on his butt.
Dave's like, dang it.
I've always had bad hangovers. Like, I've got some friends who are just impervious. They're like Neanderthals. They can just do anything.
Yeah, I get bad hangovers too, which is actually good because it really slowed down my desire to party. And
it does.
Because it's like, oh, what?
Mine are bad,
what am I
though.
Doing?
I feel I don't have much of a hangover today because I literally had two drinks. But I suffer physically when I have a hangover, like everyone does, but mine is mental. And having such fragile mental health, it's just not worth it. Mm-hmm. It's not worth it to get tanked and have a great time and dance on the tables, woo, and then the next day feel like you don't want to be alive. Like, that's not good.
You just do all that sober.
We're not like you, Wheels. I don't even put that together yet, but you're kind of a one-off. Did Andrew quit, by the way?
He's putting together the fish
fry
stuff.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
He's monitoring the judges to make sure they do it right.
We could do a little Flashback Friday here if
you
want.
Yeah, do
it. Looking for something to do.
Do
it. 62 years ago in 1963, the classic Alfred Hitchcock movie, The Birds, was released.
I'm 1 year younger than The Birds.
I love that movie. Ooh, I watched
I
it as
it.
A. I used to make my mom laugh so much because we watched it when we were little kids, and my brother and I would just like pretend the birds were coming and, you know, put your hands
yeah.
over your head.
It's a
like,
scary ass movie.
It is scary. I rewatched
Hedren,
it a couple months ago.
She's gorgeous.
Wow. She is very beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Yes. 52 years ago in 1973, Led Zeppelin released their fifth album, Houses of the Holy. That's the one with No Quarter, The Rain Song, and The Song Remains the Same. I had a really fun time playing This or That the other day, and I feel like it was pretty accurate when it came to me and bands. I think ultimately my favorite band of all time is always going to be Led Zeppelin.
Wow, I didn't know that about you.
That's
great. I just love them so much. They've influenced what I like so much that it made sense. I feel like it really narrowed it down.
And it's just fun. I love those stories too, because at the beginning everybody was like, you guys suck. That's why they named themselves what they did. Everybody thought they were going to suck. Like, nobody's going to like this crap.
My musical taste was so informed by feeling like too big of a dork. Like, I really had a huge inferiority complex even when I was young. And when I remember reading an article in Modern Drummer about The Clash. And I remember reading it and just going, they're way too cool for me. There's no need for me to even pretend to like their music because they're just way too cool. And I felt the same way about Zeppelin. Beatles somehow were more accessible, more poppy.